You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Children International is working to end child poverty around the world by giving kids access to a safe place, a team, and a path out of poverty by focusing on health, education, empowerment, and employment. Together with people like you, we're more than a nonprofit. We're a powerful force for change. Learn more at children.org.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It is the, well, I guess 2 days before Thanksgiving. And we are going to do our annual pre-Thanksgiving. We do it almost annually sometimes. We're going to have our pre-Thanksgiving consult for how you will deal with your right-wing slash Trumpista relatives. Or for that matter, your, I don't know what to call them, dum-dum left? Is that what you're saying?
Dum-dum left. The dum-dum left.
There's still going to be a couple of holdovers. You're going to be like, well, at least we don't have the Global Clinton Initiative.
We think about it. It could be a lot worse. Hillary Clinton could be taking indirect subsidies from a Moroccan subsidiary of an Argentinian bond dealer and then have like 50 people murdered. So think about it.
That's
the
right.
Left's united now.
All these people would be giving to this charity just to get favors. So joining us in that endeavor via phone will be Janine Garofalo. Also on the program today, Wisconsin GOP gerrymandered found unconstitutional, maybe huge, until, of course, Trump seats somebody on the Supreme Court and then it get reversed.
We can deal with that, man. All right. The left is united now. And just got to hang back, protest, and Jill Stein's going to be president 2020. Stop being so scared.
Meanwhile, white nationalists hail Trump in Washington, D.C.
I'm glad they're out in the open now because Obama was a white nationalist when you think about it.
Trump to violate the Constitution on day one.
Yeah, what planet have you been living in?
Reince Priebus joins the Islamophobe crowd in the White House. And Trump lashes a soon-to-be even more compliant corporate media.
Yeah. It's Standing Rock.
Meanwhile, Dems want Dems to fight. Obama maybe is weighing his options. And the
very calculating Islamic Marxist.
And the story of a horribly depressed Kentucky county, which is worried about losing its Medicaid and Affordable Care Act. Also voted for Trump. And Trump releases his plan for day one. And the electoral faithless, or I should say the faithless electoral college crowd grows just a tiny bit. I know people are skeptical of that, and they should be. But I don't know. There's definitely the, look, remember, right? There's 538 electors and about 200 and what is it? 32 are Clinton electors. And assuming Michigan, I don't know if they've locked it in yet, but there'll be something like 300 and well, you can do the rest of the math. 306,
we still don't do
306
math.
Are Trump electors. It's quite possible a bunch of the Clinton electors will actually vote for somebody else as a way of enticing Republican electors to do the same. there's a couple of different strategies. Some people are saying, like, you know, they would, all they need to do is peel off 30 electors. Assuming it's 306, all you'd have to put 306, all you'd have to do is peel off 37 Republican electors. All. I mean, that's, this has never happened before. Perfectly constitutional. It's the way the Electoral College was set up. It was actually set up to be, to exist prior to national elections, but that's all right. And then it would throw it to the House. Maybe the Congress would vote for Trump, or they would vote for the one of the top three vote getters. It's highly improbable. It's not impossible. It may be implausible, but again, it's not impossible. So if you know an elector, good time to sit him down, buy him a beer. Apparently, that's what works with the Trump administration, right? If they have a hotel, that elector, maybe you stay there. Maybe you get room service. Then you go and have a talk. Right? I mean, that seems to be, that's the other big story.
Not that complicated. Just book a room, black people. You'll get reparations. How much more can I do to spell this out for you?
Kurt Eichenwald had the big story that I think many people discounted at the time because, like, there's no way that Trump is going to win. So what difference does it make? But there seems to be a growing concern, not even growing. There seems to be a massive concern, and not even for what he's going to do in the future. But everybody go back. I mean, I remember the times we were calling the Bush administration a kleptocracy. Man, that was the minor leagues when it comes to this.
Yeah, I don't really know about that. I think Bush was a little bit low energy when it came to using the instruments of the state for personal self-enrichment.
Folks, Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape is an audio drama told week after week. It features stories about crime, love, mystery, or conspiracy with actors you know and love. Some are dramas, some are comedies. You don't want to miss a single episode. You can subscribe to Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape on iTunes, Stitcher, Wondery, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a lot of people, frankly, looking for a little bit of escapism right now. I don't blame you. And listening to a drama, it's basically like watching your favorite TV show, except for it's a radio drama. It's old timey, but it's been upgraded. They're really good. Like the Love Contract one. You were telling me about this.
Yeah, because sometimes I think that we obviously need an HR department here for very obvious reasons, Sam. And then after listening, after listening to Love Contract, I actually think we're way better off without one. We're butter off.
Why are we way butter off?
We're butter off because it's basically like shows how HR can just turn into this like bureaucratic nightmare of kind of like petty terror, specifically around this sort of like mind games around inter-office romances that actually are not really even happening. And it's kind of funny and it's kind of terrifying. And in some ways, actually, it's entertaining. I don't know if it would really count as escapism in today's environment, because in some ways I could see the HR director or whoever, the villain in it, almost being like a more cerebral version of Trump in the sense of being a terrifying boss. But it's funny. It's interesting. And I don't know. I've obviously never... it's interesting to just kick back and listen to something like that instead of watching
good,
it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It gives you a new episode drops every Tuesday. You don't want to miss a single episode. You can subscribe, like I say, to Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape on iTunes, Stitcher, Wondery.com, wherever you listen to podcasts, or however you listen to them. Make sure you subscribe at Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape on iTunes, or again, anywhere else that you check it out. It's like your favorite TV drama or comedy, but only using sound and your imagination.
And you don't need to be sitting in front of the TV to enjoy it.
You can be on the move. Very millennial in that way. You can multitask. And if you're like...
I don't know. I'm post-downloading, man. It's a lot of effort. That's what Matt said the other day. Matt was like, you go to iTunes and you have to actually subscribe. It's actually a very elongated process.
And of course, Matt listens to those in 5x speed.
3, and then the silence is taken out.
Every single drama that Matt listens to, it's like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Well, I mean, the pitch stays the same. So,
yeah, what if we do all these things? We should do like the Godfather viewing with Sam, with Matt. If we could like speed up these like classic, like keep your enemies close, your friends close, but your enemies closer.
What was on the boardwalk? What's that movie about the unions?
Oh, and, the like, Brando movie,
yeah,
Waterfront.
Yeah. I watched that for a class. That was the first movie I ever
watched.
That's another. What? Stella on the boardwalk. He just starts saying Stella. That's Glass Menagerie, dude. It's not Glass Menagerie, but it's not the Waterfront. Streetcar Named Desire. Tennessee Williams also wrote Glass Menagerie. Anyways, point is, you're wrong.
Okay. Folks, I know we're getting into the holidays. Hanukkah's coming up. Christmas, too, apparently. Finding the right gift for a guy can seem impossible. How difficult is it to find something that is both thoughtful, but also useful?
That's not a very good gift. Difficult.
I mean, that's the kind of thing I like. It's like, I mean, frankly, like, you know, I think the last thing I got from Nikki was actually a small, what do you call it? Circular saw. Not like a full size. I had a full size. But I got a 6-inch one so that I could do smaller things around the office here. There's nothing like people trying to do their work as I'm using a power tools in the office. But
it's terrifying.
Well, it's a little bit terrifying. It's all fine. But here's something that is not quite as dangerous. It is sharp, but it's a great gift. You know I love Harry's razors. You know my whole family loves Harry's razors. I don't let Saul play with them. He's 3, but he plays with the handle. And the Harry's limited edition makes a great gift because it looks nice and it feels nice. If you haven't heard of them before, Harry's was started by 2 best friends, Jeff and Andy, who were fed up with being overcharged for razors. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a great price. This holiday, Harry's is offering a limited edition shaving set. Midnight blue chrome razor handle, which you can get engraved with initials. Oh, wow. 3 of Harry's German-engineered 5-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave. Foaming shave gel that smells amazing. That's true. A beautifully designed gift box goes for $30 at harrys.com. They also offer handles and sets starting at just $10 if you haven't tried Harry's for yourself. Now, until December 8th, free shipping. You get free shipping, so act now. Go to harrys.com. Get a limited edition holiday shave while supplies last. And don't forget to enter code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout for $5 off. That's harrys.com. Code MAJORITYREPORT. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Janine Garofalo. She's going to be taking your phone calls. We're going to be playing the voicemails that our members left us. And then we'll also get to some IMs. We'll be right back in just a moment.
So listen to me, sister, listen, maybe you can hear.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report and on the phone. What a treat, ladies and gentlemen, we have joining us now from God knows where, from everywhere.
From Westlake Village, California.
She's from Westlake Village, California, ladies and gentlemen. Wait, what? Janine Groffalo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Samuel. Yes, I'm in Agoura Hills in Westlake Village or the Thousand Oaks area for the time being. I don't live there, but I'm just here now doing season two of Wet Hot American Summer.
Doing season two of Wet Hot American Summer. What is old is new again. So what is this one? So there was the movie.
This one takes place in 1991. The movie took place first day of camp, 1981. The first series was last day of camp, 1981. This is the 10-year reunion that they spoke of in the movie, 1991. Alumni reunion.
This is a future. This one is actually going forward in the series. There was a lot of. It was tricky doing that day before camp for a lot of people, it seemed like, on the last version of it.
And then some people didn't know there was a movie, so they were very, very confused. But, Sam, that's not what we're here to talk about. I just was watching, before you called, CNN, where I have to say Angela Rye of the Democratic Caucus shellacked Dildo Charlie Higbee, who is defending Trump, of course, and his racism and the children of the sun that we're meeting this Wednesday. But it was beautiful, because usually we have to sit and watch people normalize this stuff, obviously. But Charlie, I think his name is Charlie Higbee, right? He's just a horrible person. And then Mary Beth Long, who was against Trump, and now she's for him, honestly looked like she has been in a Patty Hearst style situation where somehow she has had to now support Trump and say he's a great and dynamic person. But if you look at the fear in her eyes, and I'm sorry I had to watch CNN, but on the TV in the room, there's a problem with getting signals up here in the hills, and MSNBC goes in and out. But be that as it may, Sam, the Thanksgiving issue, I think, that we typically discuss around this time of year, about dealing with family and stuff. Well, I'm just not doing it. I have only exchanged a couple of voicemails with my father. I think we have deliberately avoided speaking to one another, and we only call each other when we know the other's not going to pick up, because I think actually my father feels this is a bridge too far. Not that he would ever not vote Republican.
Right.
But I think he is... feels to some degree horrible about it. But of course he will be in the mode, if I know him, and I think I do, he will be in the mode of trying to do what mainstream media does, normalize it, walk it back. It is emotionally too hard for him to deal with the reality of it. But here's what and I'm sorry to be so strident about this, but like many of you, not only am I heartbroken, I'm so angry. I refuse to acknowledge Donald Trump as president. I do not believe he won legally. I think James Comey, The Walking Dead, which I now have a love-hate relationship with.
Right.
Because that guy Negan will not shut the fuck up. He talks too much and it irritates me. But I comfort myself sometimes with picturing him with that bat lining up a various Trump associates, Kellyanne Conway, Steve Bannon, Rudy Giuliani, all those people, and doing that scene before he hit Glenn over the head. I fantasize about Negan just lining up the Trump people and doing the whole eeny, meeny, miny, moe bat speech before clobbering someone over the head. That comforts me. I would very much like to see that. And if I had the skills as a computer person, I would make a video where I put the heads of those people over the bodies of the actors from Walking Dead. I absolutely do not believe Donald Trump. Obviously, with the Electoral College, Hillary Clinton had over a million more votes.
Oh, by the end of this, I think she is going to have, by the end of this, I think she's going to have 2 million more votes. Right now, I think it's at like 1.7. They still have 2 or 3 more million votes in California, where she won by something like, I don't even know what it was, like 70 to 30% or something. So, I mean, there's every reason to believe that she's going to win by close to 2 million more votes.
Exactly. And so that's why it irks me to no end about these postmortems about what the Democrats have to do. Now, first of all, and it's also, I refuse to acknowledge this idea of people voted for Trump who were disenfranchised, left behind. Now, if that were the case, they would have gone for Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders' message, and the Democratic Party to some degree. So that does not fly. This is straight up racism and lack of willful ignorance, lack of education. But I don't believe that the numbers that many people voted for Trump. I just don't. I really don't. I don't think a Republican president has won legally since the late 60s. I feel like with gerrymandering and fear-mongering or all manner of shenanigans, which now I call Steve Bannigans. Look at me making jokes. So,
well, I'll tell you this. You know, I'll tell you this. I mean, it's going to look like, I don't know, this is not confirmed yet, but it's going to look like that the difference in maybe Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and in Michigan, the difference in and of itself between Clinton and Trump is going to be less than, and this isn't finalized, but it's starting to look like this. People are starting to suggest this. Just in Bernie Sanders' write-ins. And so, at the very least, when Comey came out and said this stuff in terms of making, you know, Hillary Clinton out to be the devil here, don't know. It's impossible to disaggregate how many of those voters ended up just saying, I'm not going to vote, or I'm going to write in somebody's name, or I'm going to vote for Jill Stein, or I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. We don't know. But the numbers now are clear that, like, there's so many different factors here. I think some of it is that there were some people who were who just wanted to take down the whole system. But the bottom line is, like, look, a lot of these voters, the vast majority, just line up Republican versus Democrat. And Donald Trump is going to get less than 47% of the vote. Which was, you know, significantly less than even, like, I think Mitt Romney. I mean, within, you know, a couple of tenths of a percentage point, but we're talking a lot of people in that instance. And she's going to get more votes than almost anybody elected in modern era. You know, maybe the top four or five vote getters. Easy.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, Sam. So why is it this alleged? What do Democrats have to do? And also there's advertisers now searching for Middle America. I was reading in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that advertisers need to now cater to the quote unquote forgotten people, the Donald Trump people. Well, first of all, what are you talking about? So the children of the sun? Are you talking about the dumb and the mean? So you want to start making commercials aimed at real, ridiculously brain-dead people or people that are just vitriolic in their view of the world? It's just nonsense. It's nonsense. And I'm so sick and tired of hearing, we got to come together, people. No way. No way. And I've never believed there's more that we have in common than that separates us. I've always been a big one of, no, there's way more that separates us, binds us together, especially when you look at Fox News or the New York Post or you see. And you know what's ridiculous? That I have to sit here sometimes and go, hey, Mitch McConnell and David Frum are making sense. I have to sit here now and go, hey, you know, David Frum, the Axis of Evil guy. But he was talking last night, and they also, when you look at him, whenever he's being introduced on the news shows, it looks like he's being read his cancer prognosis. You see the way he just blinks as they're saying his name? He just sits there and blinks and looks stunned. But he keeps talking about follow the money, about the children of the guy Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute. And I was, that's an interesting idea. But I'm not quite sure what he means. Is he means that there's profit in being right wing, or are there certain corporate backers to these groups, or what does he mean exactly?
Well, I think it's probably there are people who are in, you know, hyping this stuff because they know it drives money. Look, if you read about what Stephen Bannon, his sort of his notion of what's going to take place and what has to take place in his theories, the idea that, you know, he's funneling money from the Mercers to these type of fringe groups because it helps drive turn. I mean, it's clear that a certain percentage of people who never voted before or hadn't voted in at the very least in 2012 came out to vote for Donald Trump. And it wasn't, my theory was always like, how are these racists going to be activated if not to vote against a black guy? But I guess really, you know, I didn't have the imagination to understand that, you know, Mitt Romney was not white and proud enough.
Hello.
He was not white and proud enough. And so they were coming out because they saw their opportunity. This guy's for us. And it's not like we need to stop the black guy from getting in. It's more like we've got a guy who's going to be our, I'm trying to think, like Ubermensch.
You know what Romney, with Romney it was? It was like the, you know how Larry David would say, I don't hate myself because I'm Jewish. I hate myself because, you know, I hate myself. It's like Romney said, I love myself.
I thought that was
because,
Woody Allen.
Or Woody Allen, one of those guys. It's all interchangeable to me. But
Jews,
they're Jew, comedian, whatever. Mitt Romney was like, I love myself because I'm me, not because of my beautiful white skin.
Right, exactly. And I think, and so, I mean, it's quite clear that a decent amount of those people came out, and now they're being celebrated. I don't know what Frum is hinting at, and I don't know why it doesn't get more explicit, frankly, but... You're right. I mean,
well, he tried to, but he was cut off because, of course, time ran out for that allotted story last night on MSNBC. It was a guy filling in for Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yeah, I don't know who it was. I wasn't watching, to be honest with you.
I don't know. Some Jewish guy. A lot of Jews. A lot of Jews in the media, Sam. I don't know if you know that.
No, I do know that. I do know that. But this dynamic, you know, and I've tried to explain this to people who, there are still very few people left, and I know they won't be around in 6 months, who are still trying to argue with me via email or Twitter that, like, I didn't understand the scope of Hillary Clinton's corruption, and that this is going to be good for Democrats because we're going to finally get rid of the corporate Democrats. And the idea now that Michelle Ray, who was the poster child after Eva Moskowitz for corporate education reform in the country, may be Secretary of Education, that idea is such a relief now, as opposed to, like, we had almost completely drummed her out of like any conversation of education. Now she comes in. If she becomes the education secretary, that's a relief because it's not Ben Carson or somebody else who just wants
to... Oh, no, he'll be at HUD, Sam. Ben Carson will be at HUD.
Well, he's taking himself,
urban development.
He's taken himself out of the running. But my point being that, like, this idea of somehow, you know, like, who has become now... you know, within the realm of acceptability, you know, the guy who wrote the Axis of Evil speech is now like our hero. The woman who would destroy public education is now like vaguely perceived as its savior. I mean, there's just going to be more and more of this.
Well, the thing is, though, I don't exactly accept that, though. In the way I was saying, like, I hate that I'm forced to say,
right,
hey, David Frum or Mitch McConnell was making sense. I still don't forgive that. I have zero tolerance. And also when it comes to, like, how do you get through family dinners? How do you get through these conversations? Well, I don't. There is no agree to disagree here. That's why I keep saying it's unprecedented and unpresidential. I will never acknowledge Donald Trump as the president. He is not. He is, and hopefully he will be impeached in some way for either treason, bribery, whatever it is, or being of unsound mind. I have no idea whether the 20th or 25th Amendment comes into play here. I have no idea. But the problem is all his helpmates in the mainstream media that just passively let this go. All his helpmates in general society that refuse to get engaged, that refuse to really emotionally get involved because it's either A, too difficult, or B, they don't care enough. But to say that Hillary Clinton is to blame for anything. And James Comey's another one that I want hit with the bat. And I want Negan to say, oh, look, his eye popped out. I would like to see that very much. And I want somebody to make that video who has the skills.
Whoa, spoiler alert.
I think
spoiler
it would provide
alert.
A lot of satisfaction. What?
Spoiler alert.
What? It's not a spoiler alert. What I'm asking as a vehicle, through your show, is whoever has the skills, and I'm not talking to the Russian teens out there who cyber hacked the election, the Macedonian teens. I'm talking about somebody who would make, from the scenes of Walking Dead, when he goes down the line the night that Glenn got clobbered, and put the faces of a lot of these Trump people over those bodies, and so we get to see them hit with the bat that are otherwise suffering. I think it would provide a lot of succor for those that are bereft this holiday season.
Do you ever share these visions with your dad over voicemail?
No. My father would not know what The Walking Dead was in a million years. So it would be difficult. And also his hearing is going, you know, he's 80 now, and it's hard to talk on the phone with him in a complex way now, because it's difficult for him to hear everything.
That's probably good.
Right? It's much better. It's better for better for us.
Have you shared this with Hardwick, Chris Hardwick? Maybe they can make that a feature on
Talking but I'm doing at midnight on the 30th.
Oh, you are?
I'm doing it at midnight on the 30th, so I will be certain to mention it to him.
Oh, fantastic. I can't believe it. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, although, as you know, I'm a Luddite, Sam. I don't know anything those kids are doing online. I don't know. I don't really understand the show. I'm happy to do it, but I have a feeling you need to be online to understand what's going on.
What are you talking about? It's on TV.
No. What I'm saying is I think the contestants, before you're on, they watch these clips online.
Oh, wait, maybe. Are you talking about At Midnight? Or are you talking about a different show?
At Midnight. I'm not talking about Talking Dead. I wish I was going to be on Talking Dead. No, I'm talking about his other show, At Midnight. Oh, if I could be on Talking Dead, Sam, I would spend the entire time talking about how the parallels between the virus that ceases the activity of the frontal lobe and the brainstem. That's the Trump vote. You know, Catherine Harris tried to tell you that the night she called in on election night with her dying breath, and you were cavalier about it. She tried to warn you about the virus spreading to all the other parts of the country outside of Atlanta and Georgia. And you were glib. You did not believe her.
I know.
But any of the votes that were for Trump, the common denominator was the virus that ceased it. It's called prototemporal frontal lobe syndrome. The executive function of the brain no longer is up to capacity. The stem, the cerebral cortex, all of it is functioning at a subpar level. The limbic brain takes over, which is the seat of our emotion. And they're called the walking dead. And that's the people that voted for Trump.
Well,
and so that's why I want Negan to take care of it. Although, let me stress again, on the show, I want Negan to shut up. He just has to stop talking. And his one-note acting, which is not his fault, that's the character, whatever, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, whoever the actor is. But I really think he just, too many words. Too many words.
I mean, the point is, you got a big stick, right? He speaks softly.
He's got that bat with the wire around it.
All right, so let's
speak softly. He doesn't do it.
Let's getting to your point. I want you to listen to this of like just who now becomes like the voice of reason now in our. I mean, when was the last time anybody listened to David Gergen about anything? I honestly think it was during. I think it was during the Bush administration. But listen to this. Here he is with Don Lemon. And they're talking about...
Oh, boy, Don Lemon is an unsuitable vehicle for news. He's an unsuitable vehicle for news.
Talking about that guy, Richard Spencer, your buddy of the Trump Light Brigade. Here's...
the National Policy Institute.
Here we go.
David Gergen, Rebecca Berg, and Philip Bump. Before we get to the business, David, I want to talk about the alt-right. I want to ask you about this. Members of the alt-right, really a euphemism for white supremacists. I guess it's just their new name now. They've rebranded themselves. They've met up for a conference in Washington over the weekend. They lauded a Trump victory, all while spewing racist and anti-Semitic hate speech. Take a look at this.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
Wow. So here's what the Trump team is saying about that. It says President-elect Trump has continued to denounce racism of any kind, and he has was elected because he will be a leader for every American. To think otherwise is a complete misrepresentation of the movement that united Americans from all backgrounds. So my question is that specific enough in this statement? Shouldn't he be very clear what and who he is calling out here?
Of course it's not clear. It's Donald Trump is trying to have it both ways here, and I don't think he'll be successful. On one hand, he puts out statements denying there's any racism or any sexism or any of these other kind of things we all find so abhorrent in his administration. And thank goodness, we want presidents to do that. But on the other hand, he's appointed Steve Bannon as one of the two most powerful people in the White House, one of the most powerful people in Washington. Whose previous company, well, he was executive chairman of it, and said of his company, that Breitbart, that it was the main platform for alt-right. And now here comes alt-right, and we see their true colors. They have this conference in Washington. It's overtly racist. It's overtly anti-Jewish. It's anti-Semitic. It's overtly against women. And it is overtly a white supremacist. They basically said this is a white nation. We're not going to lose it. We're going to reassert ourselves. And it says our motto has to be conquer or die. Yeah. Now, what kind of signal does that send to people of color? You know this, Don, much better than I do.
So there it is. I mean, they have to go to...
Hey, Gerd, I don't mind that, you know, the Gerds, that's fine.
Yep.
But the thing is Don Lemon, who, that's about as strident as I've ever heard Don Lemon be. He really lets a lot of stuff go. You know, and over the years, it's been hard to watch Don Lemon. Maybe he'll get some sense of speaking up. But the thing is, they shouldn't even be called the alt-right. They're just racist. And those guys in the room, the Hail Caesar room for the Children of the Sun. They are corny, man. They are terrible. It's almost like bad actors. You're looking at bad actors. They're bad even at that. They're just, and Tia Tequila. What the
sad
F is she doing there?
Mess.
What?
It's a mess. It's sad.
All right, go ahead, Janine. I'm sorry. Michael had to jump in there and slow the roll.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what he said.
Well, don't worry.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I was just saying, like, Tia Tequila, again, that's just something's, it's crazy. It just seems like a joke. And when they started laughing at the German name for the press, whatever it was called,
it's Lügen Press for lying press.
The Lügen Press.
Lügen Press. So they're like, oh, yeah, Lügen Press. It just seems like the weirdest collection of misfits who, again, another fantasy of mine is just, I would love to see people walk in there from other activist groups and see how they handle themselves when it's just not them. You know, you would
right.
see the biggest bunch of cowards you've ever seen in your life. And also, clearly misunderstanding history, we are not a white nation originally. The indigenous peoples were not white. The first genocide, which we'll be celebrating at Thanksgiving, actually, there was more before that one, but they aren't as codified as Columbus Day and Thanksgiving.
Right, they
are.
Didn't come with candied yams. The other genocides didn't come with candied yams.
No, they came with that green bead casserole with the crunchy onion rings on top. Traditionally,
here is my, you know, like, you know, and we're going to take some calls, but I just want to go over some of this stuff with you. This is what I find a little bit harrowing here. You have this, I think you got Flynn in there, obviously, who is a huge Islamophobe. You've got Bannon, who is on record talking to, you know, he made this Ground Zero or whatever it was documentary. And there was a piece, I think it was in Time Magazine, maybe, about someone who, a professor who was in the documentary, but he's a left-leaning professor. But he was talking about these two professors who, or philosophers who had this theory about every 80 years, there's a social upheaval. Tom Hartman actually talks about it too. And he was in conversations with Bannon And Bannon's quite convinced that there has to be a major, major conflict. And so you're starting to see, like, my concern is that all this supposed anti-Semitism that they are reflecting, you know, where, you know, CNN has got like a Chyron on there, you know, saying that, you know, white supremacists, you know, questions whether Jews are people, that this is going to pivot to some very intense Islamophobia. And here's what scares me. When you see a guy like Reince Priebus, who is dancing around this stuff, this is when you start to wonder, like, this seems to be a principle that is operative in the Trump White House. Listen to Reince Priebus here responding to Martha Raddatz.
And let's talk about another retired general, and that would be Mike Flynn, who he has chosen as national security advisor. He is highly admired for his work as an intelligence officer, but he has a history of controversial views about Islam. He said in an interview in July and at a conference in August that Islam is not a real religion, but a political ideology masked behind a religion. Is he in line with how President-elect Trump views Islam?
Well, I think so. I mean, look, phrasing can always be done differently, but clearly there are some aspects of that faith that are problematic, and we know them. We've seen it. But it certainly isn't a blanket for all people of that faith. But, Mike...
I mean, would we as a country be up in arms if people were saying, like, there's some problematic aspects of Christianity? I mean, they would never say anything like that.
Of course, there's always a double standard, Sam. There's always a double standard. It's very elastic. You're never allowed to criticize Christianity, things like that. It's totally... And you know what else bothers me? How many times you have to hear these pundits, political operatives, say the word, look, which means they're about to be an apologist for this right-wing nonsense. Anytime you... Look, hey, what look? They all do it. It's madness, and these things aren't controversial. Mike Flynn has controversial. It's not controversial. It's not controversial, meaning reasonable people can disagree. It is straight up ludicrous, and there should be zero tolerance for this nonsense. And that's the problem with corporate media. That's always been a problem with corporate media. We can go all the way back to the first printing press, I'm sure. This is not new, that they are passive observers of history as it's being rewritten and put into a narrow frame. Most of the people who work at places like CNN, NBC, ABC, I would say are apolitical to some degree, or else they couldn't stomach working there, right?
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's all kinds of people who work in these media situations in these newsrooms who wouldn't be able to stomach going to work every day if they truly cared, if they were truly involved, or if they truly had an opinion they were willing to share. Now, the only thing I was thinking about the anti-Semitism that may advance the ball somehow is that there are so many powerful Jewish people in government
and in media,
like AIPAC, who will not stand for
yeah.
it. Now, they will let other racism go by,
right?
But this one, you know, they'll let misogyny go. They'll let racism against other people go, Islamophobia go. But if you're going to be anti-Semitic, then AIPAC will be there to stop.
Well, I'll
you.
Tell you something. This is like, you know, this, and maybe it's a good time to start taking some calls and playing some voicemails that we have. But like, that would be one thing that I would suggest, depending on what your family background is, because I'm quite convinced that, you know, if enough Jews send around enough letters, it will hit one of the 22% of 25% of Jews that don't consistently vote, let's say, for the Democrats. And and I think like those 25%, I think like, you know, 3/4 of them are just are donors to to Republicans, that maybe they'll react to that. But I think the way that they talk about attacking Muslims may just trumpet, forgive the pun. But let's...
I don't know, Sam. That's what I'm saying is, like I said, they're willing to let Islamophobia go. They're willing to, you know, the Tea Party. And that's another thing. This isn't new, this racism. The Republican Party has been the party of racism since the 60s, since the split during the Civil Rights
right.
era. And they have been, and there's no, you know, to me, it is so obvious where Nixon was coming from, where Ronald Reagan was coming from, where the Bushes were coming from. The Republican Party has been a home base for racist and misogynist thinking for years and years and years now. There, it's, you know, where Reagan announced when he was running for president, you know, where the civil rights workers were murdered. That is not an accident. There is this law and order vote that is always thrown out there. They have been the party of race baiting and dog whistles for years and years and years. This is not new. This is just more
explicit.
Obvious.
All right, let's take a phone call. You're calling from, hold on 1 second. Sorry here.
Hello?
There you go. You're calling from an 832 area code. Who's this?
Hello, I'm calling from Paul's Church.
From where?
Paul's Church.
Okay. From
Paul's Church, Virginia.
There you go. What's on your mind? Got to be quick.
Okay, sorry about that. I tried to call in election night, and I waited and waited and waited. And then I got off the phone, and I realized that it was really the music, not the election, that was making me so sad.
Oh.
Your call-in music is tremendously depressing.
Our hold music is very sad.
Hello.
All right, you're on the phone,
Virginia.
I agree
with you. It is. I've been on hold a lot, too.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys at long last. I'm an American Muslim and of WASP descent. So I have an interesting outlook upon everything that's going on right now. And I have to say what you were saying about reaching out. American Muslims at this point are really in a situation similar to Egyptian Christians. And they're dependent on their Muslim neighbors to stick up for them because they're a minority.
Mm.
So, you know, we really don't have a voice at this point. And I've been involved in interfaith in the community around D.C. And it's been tremendous. We've prayed at the synagogue and met with Christians and Jews and you know, I also would bring atheists and people of other beliefs together because this is, you know, if you look at the groups that Trump targeted, if any of those individual groups were pretty good political activists, the LGBT community,
right.
The Latinos,
right,
et cetera, and we all have to band together.
I think you're right. I mean, I think we're going to all have to watch each other's backs going forward.
I would agree with that. I would say, yes, people who are on the right side of history absolutely should band together. And people who are being oppressed should band together. What I'm saying is I have no wish to make common cause with the oppressor, with the people responsible for perpetuating this Trump nonsense and this Steve Bannon, W.C. Fields, Gin Blossom. By the way, I think he's a terrible alcoholic. Look at his nose. And that's not me trying to make a joke. I think that's part of his problem, is wet brain. And I think that was part of Breitbart's problem, was drug and alcohol abuse, which I think can make a person crazy. But I do think that the left, progressives, or any people of good conscience and who have a moral compass, anybody, however you want to discuss it, describe it, all of us have to stick together. All of us have to defend each other, and all of us have to defend against the normalization of this stuff or just letting it slide, or people who are passive. But what I don't want to do is to try and say, hey, you know, we're all, you know, human. Let's get together, you know, with the right wingers or with the people. I don't want to do that. They don't deserve it. They do not deserve our respect or our, hey, let's just hear what you have to say. What they have to say right. has no legitimate. It's not legitimate. These words of racism, these words of hate, these words of intolerance, this false notion of history. It doesn't deserve a hearing. You know what I mean? Like it shouldn't be
you're
just
so intolerant of questioning the humanity of other people who share a different religion than you.
I just wanted to have an open dialogue and rap, man.
Wanted to see if everybody was human on this call, but whatever.
I just personally think that people with Down syndrome should be systemically murdered and Jews shouldn't hold high office, but I guess you don't want to have an open exchange.
Right. Well, you know,
I don't like the free exchange
of ideas. That's your opinion. Look.
All right, well, listen.
You know, I blame the loss of the election to the death of Tim Russert, because if Tim Russert had done a David Dukin interview with Trump, that would have been the end of him.
Well, I hope you're right about it.
I don't know if that's true, because the people that support him like that. Tim Russert, as nice as he was, God rest his soul, was a guy who very frequently let nonsense fly on his show.
Yeah, indeed.
He would focus that.
Yeah.
And he would focus on the wrong thing. He'd be like, your anti-Semitism is inconsistent.
And David Duke was his limit.
Well, you would think that the limit, that should be everybody's limit.
Yeah,
that
and it was
should
also
be everybody's
and,
limit.
All right. Well, I gotta let you go, but I would also just add that, you know, that was a different time where you didn't have a president who was actively courting these people. So, you know, the media tends to sadly sort of move in concert sometimes with this stuff. Here is Megyn Kelly, who again, not necessarily someone you would go to, but she's on with Howie Kurtz, probably the last person I want to hear from in any given situation. But she's basically saying that she knows, and of course, she's so bold about this, she won't reveal who, because she's not going to put her neck out either. But basically, that there were some TV anchors on many networks who were play-acting. Let's see if we can come up with a list after we hear what Megyn Kelly said.
Certain TV hosts were in the tank for Donald Trump, you say, to the point where you say that they would arrange with Trump in advance to ask him certain critical questions or do certain hits on him so they would appear to have some credibility.
Yeah.
So are you suggesting that they were play acting?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was acting.
And this was in more than one network, you say?
Yes.
But you can't tell us who?
No, because these were off-the-record conversations that I was privy to that I'm not at liberty to reveal. So while I'd love to tell you who it was, I have this information, and I'm not allowed to name the names. But trust me, this did happen, and it's been confirmed to me by more than one television executive.
During the
she's privileged to do it. She can do it. She wasn't reporting. She overheard it.
Well, Megyn Kelly is strange. I don't know what prevents her from coming out against Trump from the way that she's been picked on. But also, I can't stand Megyn Kelly at Fox News, and she kept characterizing the protesters after the stolen election. She kept the cupcake brigade and the whining kids and all this
right.
nonsense, deliberately mischaracterizing it. But you know, that Judge Jeanine lady on Fox News.
Yes.
Again, I need these people in the lineup for the video one of your fans is going to make, Sam.
There's plenty of faces there too on all those people. Well, I don't know who Megyn Kelly was talking about. Like, I imagine she's talking about she's talking about probably Bill O'Reilly. I don't even know if you could say that about Sean Hannity, because he was clearly in the bag for Trump. But I wonder who it could possibly be at the other networks. Who could it have been at the other networks that she was saying was play acting by asking tough questions? Now, I know there was some audio tape that was going around of something during break, but I'm trying to think, who could she possibly be referring to? Well, I guess we'll never know. But here's Kellyanne Conway on Morning Joe, just coincidentally, saying that, listen to what Kellyanne Conway is saying.
Presidents summon in the mainstream media, TV anchors like Trump did yesterday, and essentially they bury the hatchet. It doesn't sound like, from the cover of my New York Post right here, that that's exactly what transpired yesterday.
Buried a hatchet.
He buried a hatchet in the backs of most of the major TV anchors. But what was the purpose of the meeting, and did it go off like it was intended to?
I have a
a different view of the meeting, having sat there and having helped to organize it. I actually thought it was a very lively, spirited exchange.
There's no debate on that, right?
Well, but from my perspective, it's very simple. President Trump and the media have to share joint custody of the nation and its people for the next 4 or 8 years.
They got to share joint custody of the nation.
Joint custody. Yeah, it's been a rocky marriage. Kellyanne Conway is, you know, I met her years ago.
I remember.
During the Bush era, a couple of times she would be on certain shows or panels I would be on. And there's something so very wrong with her in the same way. And this has nothing to do with gender, because I always feel it's terrible. There's so much misogyny going around that it makes me feel terrible criticizing females. I know that sounds strange, but she her particular brand of duplicity and disregard for ethics and lack of dignity transcends gender. I don't even want to count her as a female, because something's very, very wrong with her. There's something very wrong with her.
I mean, if you can hang with Trump for that long, I think that is like immediately the first symptom of a clinical problem. I think if you can,
she also looks like she had a stroke.
There is something wrong with her, and there seemed to be something a little bit wrong with her, in the same way that when you see Ann Coulter, something seems to be wrong.
Yeah.
Now, Laura Ingraham, for some reason, seems to be the most stable of them, although she has no moral compass either. But she carries herself in a different way than Kellyanne Conway. Almost seemed like a shaky chihuahua to me. And the same way Babe Buchanan, and again, I'm sorry they're all females, but their particular brand of disregard for truth and ethics transcends gender. They just happen to be female. They seem almost like coke fiends. I'm not saying they are. They just display the attributes of somebody who has got a problem with cocaine. I'm not saying they do. I really am not. I'm just saying they're just this shaky, weird quality.
We have joint custody, man.
Who almost is shifty.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I'm sorry.
Or maybe anorexic. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But also, people like Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon and all these other hacks, male, female, and otherwise, that work for people like Trump, they can't get jobs at reputable places. You know, in the same way that people that work at Fox can't work at other places. You know what I mean? They can't.
Well, there's, you know,
exception.
I'm trying to think of like another time which where you had just a bunch of sort of outsider-y type of misfits who were not necessarily rebels, but just didn't fit in. But then all of a sudden they put on, let's say, a uniform, and they look around and they realize like, hey, I'm one of the gang. And then I think Hannah Arendt wrote about that quite a bit.
Cohn, right, this
exactly.
is not new. People that align themselves with Joe McCarthy or Roy Cohn or any other type of group, the Pinkertons, that would, you know, harass minors,
yep.
Things of that nature. There's always those type of outside misfits, KKK, the Tea Party.
Gives you a sense of belonging. What was that documentary that I think it was, What's-His-Face did, the Errol Morris about the Holocaust denier? It was the same sort of dynamic there.
Oh,
but
yeah,
let's,
yeah, yeah.
Let's go, let's take another phone call. You're calling from a 610 area code. Who's this?
Hi, Sam. This is Shady in PA. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Janine's on the phone. What's on your mind? Got to be relatively quick.
Oh, okay. Janine, thanks for coming on the show. I really loved your latest special, and hate ever to the crew.
Thanks.
I'm a little freaked. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a little freaked out. I kind of tried to write out my fear into a joke. So now that they're calling the protesters at the pipeline terrorists, and they're going to do that to the opposition, and Trump said he would kill terrorist families, won't that destroy his base if his predator drones kill all my racist uncles?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, if all your racist uncles were killed, that would certainly eat into his constituency. But
Maybe there's a learning annex that will help with the comedy. but it's a nice try. I mean, the sentiment, I get the sentiment. I think you're on to something. Appreciate the call.
No, when you're freaked out, I think it helps to try and write it out as a joke. When you're bereft and you're emotionally struggling with this installation of Donald Trump, I think it's a good exercise. It's a healthy exercise to try it, write it out as a comedy thing.
I really do. I'd add, you should tell that joke at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
To your family.
I will, after like my sixth Jägerbomb or something.
All right, yes. All right, well, good luck with that. I hope that works out. All right, let's listen to a couple of voicemails that we got over the weekend for you. Let's go with this first one's coming from a 503 area code. Matt, you got this one? Okay, here it is.
Hi. This is a question for Ms. Garofalo. First and mostly, or most importantly, I want to say thank you for your voice and activism, especially when too few, if any, public figures stood up against Bush and Cheney and the Iraq invasion. Okay, so that aside, what does former Florida Secretary of State Katherine Harris think of Trump's election, and what cabinet position is she interested in? Getting back to Ms. Garofalo, where can we see you next on the TV, in the theater, or on the stage? Much appreciation. This is Jill Hurst from Staten, Oregon. And I guess that's it.
So there you have it.
Thank you, Jill Hurst. I actually will be in Portland, Oregon for the Bridgetown Comedy Festival in May for their 10th anniversary festival. And
how's that for service?
Oops, what was that noise?
So, you know, I had to harass you with my board.
Oh, okay. And I'll take the more self-serving questions. Self-serving for myself first to answer questions.
Well, you answered already.
She wanted to know when she could see me on the TV. Well, I'm doing the What Hot American Summer thing now. I have a special on CISO, a comedy special on CISO called If I May, although I don't know how people watch CISO.
Oh, people, we advertise for CISO.
I have a new
with Majority, they can get a discount.
TNT series coming out.
A what?
Foreign Bodies.
A what?
I did a British series that's going to air on TNT called Foreign Bodies.
Oh, cool. We actually have a CISO promo. Is the promo code Majority or Majority Report? So people can check that out on CISO for, I think, like a discount or for like a free month or something like that. So.
Oh, okay. Also, I wanted to say again, thank her for her phone call and tell people who probably, I'm sure everybody who listening to you knows this about the march in Washington
on the 21st,
January 21st. But on January 20th in New York City at Terminal 5, there will be a benefit. Myself, Samantha Bee, Bridget Everett, Liz Winstead, Sarah Thayer, others are going to be doing a benefit before the march, and then we're all going to Washington the next day.
Oh, cool.
And there's going to be a march in Central Park that goes to Terminal 5, and that's January 20th in New York.
Fantastic. All right, let's listen
I think also people... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think also Alana Glazer, you know, the girls from Broad City are going to be doing the benefit. I was just giving more names.
I think those are enough. I mean, if people are interested in going, I think you and Samantha B, boom, people are there.
Oh, you old so-and-so.
Let's go to voicemail number 3. This is from a 509 area code. It's a regular caller on the program, but we still let him through. Here it is.
Hi, Sam and Janine. This is Ronald Reagan calling from Yakima, Washington. I have a nephew. He's about 12, and he's an obnoxious Trump supporter. Not surprisingly, his father is a police officer. My question is, I have a feeling he's going to want to spike the ball regarding the election results. And my question is, how hard can you strike a child without it being wrong / without getting arrested? Thank you.
I would actually say there's no need to hit a 12-year-old, but there is a definite need to take him to a private room in that home for Thanksgiving and genuinely talk to him, because you're going to be saving this kid. It's like good parenting, or, you know, it's to allow a child to be a Trump supporter and to spew the nonsense is like child abuse. It's like handicapping your child. It's not helpful for the child. It's going to get him in trouble with his or her friends, because I'm sure most other 12-year-olds do not share that opinion. And I would think that you would be doing this child a great, great, great service as an uncle, because I think he said it was his nephew, to genuinely speak to this child, because the child is too young to understand. He's just mimicking other things that he's heard. He doesn't really know what he's saying, but he's going down the wrong road, and it's making him lesser of a human being. This is like a real opportunity to help this kid out and to help this kid grow in a very positive way. I'm being sincere here. There's no need to hit him, but there is definitely a need to really talk to him and to show him why what he's saying is so unkind, so ill-informed, so misguided. I think it's important in that, and as an uncle, in an avuncular way, you would have done something very good, avuncular style.
You know, there's also sometimes a room for just a little tap on the side of the head, just like a little flick of the wrist.
Yeah, or
just
maybe
to
a
focus,
rap on
focus
the knuckles.
Attention. Yeah,
old,
something like that.
Or maybe Catholics boarding school style.
Accidentally throw an elbow or something like that.
Or like a football.
Yeah, that's okay if the kid's not responding properly.
We should remind you, the promo code for CISO, if you want to see Janine's special, is Majority. Let's go. We got a voicemail from, this one's from all the way from Berlin. This is a number 11. It starts with a 4-9. We got callers from everywhere. You know, members who called in to leave a voice message. This is from Berlin. Let's hear this one. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, first time caller from Berlin, Germany. First of all, my condolences for the election. My question is, who do you think would they get for Trump's first correspondence dinner? What are the chances of it being Dennis Miller? Okay, bye.
Oh, God. That's brutal.
How's that for a horrifying thought? Dennis Miller as the first...
I actually could not hear what she said. What did she say?
She said, first of all, she said condolences for your country.
Yes.
She said, who do you think Trump will get for the first correspondence dinner? Do you think it'll be Dennis Miller?
Oh, that's interesting. Dennis Miller, although I had heard, this may not be true, that he had another, quote-unquote, Road to Damascus-style come-to-Jesus moment where he went back.
What?
That might be false information. Somebody had told me they ran into Dennis Miller and he was... gone back to the other Dennis Miller that we liked. Who knows, though? I guess if he sees an opportunity to monetize,
I was going to say maybe
vitriol again, he'd do it.
Bada bada bada.
Yeah, the press correspondent. I didn't even think about the White House correspondence dinner is going to be horrible now. Maybe I'll get Jeff Dunham and Peanut.
I wonder if we got to look into this Dennis Miller thing, because I wonder if it was like his contract ran out at Fox. And so
I'm not sure. Like I said, he I think was making calculating made it a business decision, but he also was a unpleasant gentleman, but he was just using politics to hide behind. But politics is personality. You know what I mean? They just, and also the people that voted for Trump, the few that did, or those that support him, or those that apologize for him, or those that just let it go, they are just speaking volumes about so much that they lack as a human. There is such a gaping, and also Mike Pence, if we've learned anything, we've learned he's gay, gay, gay. The vitriol, anti-gay stance that he has taken, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, where there's wraps, there's smoothies. Sam, I say
that
every 5 years. But anytime anybody is as anti-gay as Mike Pence is, I have no, especially if you believe in the conversion therapy, then you're telling us that you're gay. That's in the same way that, remember, Sam always was always opposite day, like with the Bush administration, if they had a thing called the Clean Skies Act or something, or the Clear Skies Initiative, you knew it meant that Smokey Joe Barton was going to get deregulation and there's going to be more pollution, right? So that's another thing that to look out for in the Trump arena. Everything will be named the opposite of what it does, but also there will always be projection in the same way that before this stolen election, you had all the Trump operatives crowing about vote fraud, and they're not going to recognize the results of the election if Trump doesn't win, so that it forces Democrats to go, you have to accept it.
Right.
Right. So that if it's stolen the other way, you know what I mean? You have to accept it, but which I don't. But the thing is anytime you have Steve Bannon or any of those people accusing the left or Democrats or progressives or other people of something, that's what they're up to. It's like child's play. You just accuse the other of what you're up to deflect attention and to divert a conversation. But I have no doubt that, you know, in the same way with Hillary, lock her up, even though, you know what, the Trump Foundation's been breaking the law. It always has been breaking the law. That's why you with great vehemence call for the prosecution of Hillary Clinton, for the Clinton Foundation, all this kind of stuff. Whatever it is that you're doing, in the same way that Mike Pence is hiding his gayness, his extreme gayness, and that's not a criticism to be gay. What I am criticizing is being a person who attacks other gays. But Mike Pence is struggling.
Well,
he's struggling.
We do have a clip of Mike Pence. This was one of those. This was his first, I guess, moment alone inside the White House office, and here he is.
Mom, why did you do that to me?
Do you not remember that?
Yes, of course I remember that. And who could forget it? That's right up there with, hey, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up. I'll never forget those sound cues.
Hey, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
All right, here is...
For those who trespass, Bill O'Reilly.
Here is Mike Pence on Face the Nation, refusing to say whether or not Trump is going to allow lobbyists and family so much access, because we're moving into sort of uncharted territory in terms of like the full-on kleptocracy that is involved in this administration. Here he is. Mike Pence always has this sort of forlorn look, and maybe it is just because he's just sort of he's just sort of fighting so much inside him, like it's causing him real sadness. But here he is.
United States. A lot of people around the country want to see us drain the swamp. They want to see fundamental ethics reform. That's going to happen starting January the 20th.
So just to button that up, so no lobbyists or donors in the administration, as he promised. That's right.
Well, I think what the president-elect has made clear is that we're going to have people in the administration who are 100% focused on serving the American people and moving the Trump agenda forward. And to sit with him in these interviews that have been taking place over the last week, to sit with him with congressional leaders, as the two of us did a week ago, is to see someone who's completely focused on keeping the promises that he made to the American people. And I got to tell you, it's really been inspiring to be standing shoulder to shoulder with our president-elect in these few short days since that historic election.
But that doesn't quite sound like a yes to me. So it seems like there's some wiggle room on the no lobbyists and donors. So we'll look for some clarity on that to come. But let me ask you about this question.
God forbid you should ask it, Ben.
Liquidate his holdings with his business. Will he?
Well, I saw that editorial. What I can tell you is that I'm very confident that the president-elect and his extraordinary talented family are going to work with the best legal minds in this country and create the proper separation from their business enterprise during his duties as president of the United States.
Should people
around him is to be around a man who is completely focused on the people's business and to get to know his children.
Men
and women of extraordinary capability who I know he's confident they can lead the business enterprise while he puts all of his energies, all of his focus in the people's business.
Should employees of the Trump businesses be involved at all in the people's business, in government business, meetings?
I have the utmost respect.
I think during this transition, it's very helpful.
How about during the presidency?
For the president-elect to, I think during the presidency there will be the proper separation.
Oh my God!
It's not in the transition.
It's painful. It makes me sick. And to see the Trump kids with their Habsburg chinned. Mush cartilage faces. They have the type of faces I feel like you could put your finger into the knuckle. You know what I mean? Like this mush, weak chin, inbred looking faces. And it's so ridiculous. You know what? And why not just keep steamrolling over these things? Why not? You know, until somebody stops Trump or the way, you know, with George Bush, number one and two, or Ronald Reagan, nobody stops them. Nobody stopped Dick Cheney. And by the way, he was always invested in Halliburton. This isn't new either, the double dipping and having conflict of interests. George Bush Sr. with Eli Lilly and Dick Cheney with Halliburton. Donald Rumsfeld had holdings in the swine flu or bird flu vaccine company. Lynn Cheney had all kinds of things, I think, with Boeing and other aerospace engineer companies. They're just all these people have holdings. It isn't new. It's just that Donald Trump, again, is more explicit about these things. And there's nepotism. There's never been nepotism more than there has been with Bush Jr. and Sr. That's nepotism. It's ridiculous. There's just no end to the profits that presidents and their families reap from these things. But Republicans are just worse. They're always worse. They're worse. I hate the old both sides do it in Congress. Both sides do it, these false equivalencies. I have zero tolerance for that either. Republicans will be the end of us. They're going to get us all killed. If only Trump supporters and Republicans suffered for a Trump presidency, I'd be fine with that. I don't give a shit. If just Trump people suffer from a Trump presidency, that's fine with me, because how else would they learn? But since everybody gets dragged down into it, that galls me that everybody has to suffer for this. And Donald Trump not wanting windmills because it obscures the view from his golf course, and suggesting an ambassador for England when they already have one. And of course, making common cause with UKIP and all this stuff around the world, and with Le Pen in France. He does this because he has to be with stupid people. That's why he loves the uneducated. Donald Trump doesn't work unless you're stupid. It does not work unless you're stupid or craven. And the same with the Republican Party. It doesn't work unless the ill-informed or the craven support it. You know what I mean? Like, it is shocking to me. It's shocking to me that people are surprised by it. But I also don't believe at all that Donald Trump won this election. I do not believe it. And one day history will bear that out, that there was some cyber tampering. I mean, if cyber criminals can make ATMs spew cash around the world, they can tamper with the software of voting machines. They did it during the Kerry election. And that's why it's like, how did the media get it so wrong? How did the pollsters get it so wrong? They didn't get it so wrong. They didn't.
Well, I mean, we're only talking about in Michigan, less than 15,000 votes. In Wisconsin, less than 30,000 votes. Pennsylvania, I think it's going to end up being about 70,000 votes. We're not talking a lot of votes here. Out of 130, 125 million votes that need to be played with. And of course, there was, a myriad of other other types of suppression. Let's take another voicemail. This one is number 14 from a 404 area code.
Hey, Majority Report. I was thinking about
how people were talking about, oh, well, you know, we'll vote him out in 4 years and all this. That's what a lot of the far left liberals were saying, that wouldn't be so bad. But I was thinking, they've already been killing voting rights. And if they have, well, they, since they have the entire government, they could just keep doing it. And with how marijuana legalization is going, I was wondering if, like, if the federal government just decides that they want to start prosecuting it now, all those people who are, hey, we got marijuana. Oh, wait, now the federal government's coming in. So, you know, the idea that we can just vote them out in 4 years, can we take that for granted or not? I guess that's my question. Thanks, Spot.
So the question is, can we just take for granted that we'll get rid of them in 4 years? I mean, I think you and I learned the hard way in 2004 that that it doesn't necessarily work out that way. I mean, we all remember the look on Karl Rove's face in 2012 when Ohio went the wrong way for him. He was really surprised. And we now know John Kerry has said that he believes that the election was stolen in Ohio. I mean, and that he just didn't contest it.
Walter O'Dell helped steal it. I mean, stolen elections, it's not conspiracy tinfoil hat stuff, Sam. It's just business. It's just business. People seeking to consolidate power. John Kerry won that election. George Bush did not beat Al Gore. Like I said earlier in this phone conversation, I don't believe a Republican has won honestly since the late 60s. They do not represent the country, the way the country has moved. But the mainstream media is always behind the curveball, and Washington is always behind the curveball. And it's draining the swamp nonsense. If I hear that phrase one more time, I'm going to scream. Of course, you say drain the swamp. What you mean is you're going to pollute it further. It's just, you know what, Sam? I unfortunately have to go to work.
Okay.
Well, I just got a text saying my pickup's downstairs.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Janine. I appreciate you hanging in there for us. And people can check you out on CISO and Netflix and TNT and in Portland. And hopefully people will come to the protest on the 20th in New York and down in D.C. on the 21st.
Sam, I want to say a thank you to you and all your coworkers again. But in all sincerity, Sam, you've been fighting the good fight for so long. You have been so committed to this. In many ways, to the detriment of your personal life. You know, you have every day been in there, informed and helping people sort through this stuff. You have committed yourself entirely, and I can't help but feel, unfortunately, responsible. I feel badly about it for dragging you into it with Air America in the first place. But I know that there are so many people that are so grateful. And I've told you this before, but when I do stand up on the road, there are people that come up to me all the time just to say how much they love you and need to hear you. So you should know that, that you deserve a great amount of respect and gratitude for what you've been doing every day for so many years now. And it's unfortunate that we're going back to the Bush era, but worse. But thank goodness you are here. And the last thing I want to say is peaches.
Peaches. Thanks, Janine.
Peaches. I love you, Sam.
I love you too.
Goodbye.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Now, the peaches thing, I don't know if people, longtime listeners obviously know this, but you have to go way back. You have to go back 11 plus years to understand what the peaches thing is about. Janine and I, of course, when we started doing the Majority Report on Air America radio, we knew nothing about doing a radio show. We used to say at the time, this is our show was where college radio meets college radio. And we did a pre-recorded interview with the musician Peaches, whom, of course, I had no idea who she was. And from Janine's perspective, Janine was not terribly comfortable with someone who's so with that much sexuality, period, going on. Which is not to say that I am either. I'm also that way, but I didn't even know enough about her. And so at the time, we would do some of the longest interviews on radio. we would do like a full hour. You know, it's a radio hour. It's about 48 minutes. So we started playing it. It was a pre-tape. And we had launched a blog at Majority Report Radio back in the day. And we would read the blog. And we would get, at that time, it was a lot of people, like 40,000 people a day, unique hits. We would get literally like 2,000 comments an hour. And I would be reading through them. And about 10 minutes into the interview, we were getting probably like 100 comments a minute saying, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. This sounds like my uncle who knows nothing interviewing Peaches. And we were both, as we were listening back to the interview, like, yeah, we don't know what we're doing at all. And neither one of us is equipped to do this. And so at one point, we just stopped the interview. We just came on air. We said, we had to stop this. We feel bad. We like Peaches. I mean, I didn't know her, but Janine, you know, knew of her, I think. I don't know if she said, you know, we like her music, but we're not good enough, and we're not doing her any favors by this interview, and it's embarrassing us, and we're sorry. And then for like the next 3 or 4 years, we signed off every show. Peaches, as a tip of the hat, if you will, to the blog, which had, you know, basically controlled the show. So that's what that was about.
What? I'm just kidding. I'm going to read out. Can I read a couple of tweets? Trump is meeting with the New York Times right now. So this is from Dean Basquiat asking if he feels good about energizing the alt-right. I don't want to energize that group, and I disavow that group. It's not a group I want to energize, and if they are energized, I'll look into it and find out why.
Trump said this?
Yes, this is not amazing. All right. I don't want to hurt the Clintons. I really don't. She went through a lot, suffered greatly in many ways. Pressed, basically, like, the person doesn't say this in the tweet, but maybe someone's like, you know, you promised on national television in front of 50 million people to put her in jail. Is this something you're just dropping? Back to Hillary Clinton. It's not something that I feel very strongly about. Thomas Friedman, who, by the way, in the intro to the show, he always sounds like he has like food stuffed in his mouth when he calls for shared sacrifice.
Thomas Friedman says,
will you withdraw from the climate change accords? I'm looking at it very closely. I have an open mind. I think there's some connectivity. This is human activity and climate change. Something. It depends on how much. But I'm also thinking about how much it costs American companies. Now to conflict of interest. If it were up to some people, I would never see my daughter Ivanka again.
What?
The conflict of interest, ? Trump says, if it were up to some people, I would never, ever see my daughter Ivanka again.
And I'm just listing off her husband has that request, and her brothers and half-sister, because...
That is his main concern. That is the only, like, the farthest that his brain has gone.
What happens to date night if she is not in on the security briefing?
Jesus Christ.
By the way, Tiffany's not on the security briefing. Do you know how hard it was to make out with her for Sweet 16?
Here's a disgusting quote that just came out in this BuzzFeed piece, okay? Apparently, Washington Post columnist Richard Cohen wrote a piece that was edited out. A part of it was edited out. And the paragraph goes like this. It's talking about Jared Kushner, our Tom Hagen, who married Trump's stunning daughter Ivanka. Quote, can I ask you something? Trump asked someone I know about his then 13-year-old kid. Is it wrong to be more sexually attracted to your own daughter than your wife?
Yeah, but it was so tasteless that I made those jokes during the campaign. I mean, it's true. He's into her. Just two more really briefly. What about selling your company? Well, that's a really hard thing to do because I have real estate. Unquote. And this is tangential but related. Same thread. Billy Bush's current outgoing voicemail says the following. This is now quoting the New York Times. You've reached Billy Bush's office. He's busy making America great again.
Oh, my God.
Great. Evil is winning. And Trump, sometimes compared to all these other people, seem like it was what Trita Parsi said yesterday. He's like, actually, Trump might be the most rational person on foreign policy in the room of the people he surrounded himself with.
Well, I think Bannon, I think this is completely Bannon stuff.
Yeah.
I think Bannon is trying to bring about a third world war. I
buy it.
Genuinely
entirely.
Believe this is part of his agenda. There's every reason to believe that. And I don't know how you could stoke that more than with the people that are coming in that door. I mean, we'll see. We'll see who wins out here. But it's very, very concerning. And particularly when you see, like, Reince Priebus having to... I mean, look, we know on the campaign they were perfectly willing to say, like, oh, no, when he said X, he didn't say X. And they were never held to that. But Priebus is being disciplined from the inside, not for concern about being disciplined from the outside when he says that stuff. And that's what's very disturbing about it. All right, let's take a break. We'll go into the fun half. Just do another half hour, 40 minutes or so. This will be the last live show of the week. Tomorrow, we've got a new interview with Becky Bond and Zach Exley. These are two senior advisors to Bernie Sanders' campaign. This is an interview we did, was it last week? We talked about the election and moving forward and their book that they've written that's a resource for organizing. On Friday, we're going to put out a brief show that will be two interviews I did for last week's Ring of Fire. You may have heard them already, or maybe it's this week's Ring of Fire. One from last week, one from this week. I can't really remember now. One is with David Dayan, who has a piece about whether or not Obama can do a recess appointment, among other stories that he's talking about, and also an interview with Les Leopold, who writes about something that we had talked about in the past with Bill Lozanik about the SEC. And the reason why I want to put that one on is both because, I mean, for me, it was a very difficult interview. And you'll hear it at the end, I think. Just at the very end. Because it was the type of thing that I anticipated we would be having fights about and pushing for in the event of a Clinton administration. And that is the closure of or reversal of the SEC rule. It's just a rule that says that companies can buy back their own stocks where there's, you know, mounting evidence that this is hugely problematic from a wealth inequality standpoint, hugely problematic from a jobs leaving the country standpoint, that trade deals are far less relevant than this. You know, I don't think the impact, this is a 1982 change where you're allowed to buy back stocks, the genuine impact, trade is a second, it seems to me, second degree issue here, that the value of moving your company outside of the country and getting those cheaper labor, even though it may in some ways, you know, undercut the long-term health of your company. The value is that if you're a board of director, if you're a hedge funder, if you're a CEO, you still make money off it.
Yeah.
Big time. Big, 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 big league.
Chasing the MSNBC ratings, talking about Bill Lozanik and stock buybacks while the Clintons are literally murdering people out on the street, purging voter rolls. This is why Bernie isn't president. Thanks a lot, Majority Report.
I don't know if I said this to him afterwards, but I was like, this whole interview. Like, we don't even know if there's going to be an SEC. I mean, there'll be something called the SEC, but it will be so dismembered by the time this time next year.
What if I just put Ivanka in charge of it and then we could co-chair meetings together? That would be amazing.
But anyways, I've given myself till after Thanksgiving to sort of move into this sort of new mode. We're still going to be talking about ideas, and I think we're still going to be trying to differentiate what we do here as opposed to other places by, you know, bringing a little bit more a thoughtfulness in it and keeping alive certain ideas to go forward. But, you know, I've had people who are emailing me and, you know, who mentioned this about Michelle Ray. I mean, all these discussions about neoliberalism and whatnot, that's all well and good, but those fights are going to go away, sad to speak. We're going to be mad at people like Joe Manchin and, you know, Heidi Heitkamp and John Tester for breaking off from the Democratic Party. But the arguments are going to be partisan. No one's not looking forward to this more than me. But this is the fights that we're going to have. And these are fights that we're going to have to wage. And we're going to have to engage because there's going to be times where I think we're wondering how much worse can it be. And I think we're going to be consistently surprised. And so at different times, and there's some encouraging things out there, only so far as like there's polling showing that Democrats, 62% of Democrats do not want the Democrats to in any way do anything but obstruct Trump. And this is a radical change for Democrats. I think that, you know, the negative campaigning exclusively didn't help win the election or get as many votes as needed or whatever you want to say or where they were needed. But I think the Democratic Party is acutely aware of what kind of threat Trump brings, at least most people.
Well, maybe if you'd covered the purge voting rolls in Brooklyn, we wouldn't be facing all of this. But you were so focused on sucking up to Chris Hayes, and the majority report needed to be so establishment that you didn't expose my wife's crimes. Now Bernie's not president, and we're in this situation, which you can't blame us for, and is also an amazing, unparalleled historical opportunity at the same time.
And you're forgetting also, not only can they not be blamed for it, but also is the perfect tactical move to teach Democrats a lesson.
This is the only way I'll ever learn. That's what Dr. Jill Stein said. Lesser evil paves the way for the greater evil. Now Democrats are united.
That's right.
And we don't have to hear from my wife again, who is the worst criminal in human history.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, there's not a lot of value in relitigating this. I mean, I think that, you know, I think to a certain extent, the wings of the Democratic Party that I want to be ascendant are going to be ascendant. They're not going to be... they're not going to take complete power. There's just not enough of them that are elected. You know, Chuck Schumer is going to be the leader of the Democratic minority.
Assalamu alaikum.
And there'll be a lot of that. And hopefully, I mean, honestly, that's the role he's going to play, right? He's going to be like, I am a full-born radical. Believe me.
This is entirely unacceptable. We're
going to stand up to this man. I played golf with him. I've never done that. I've never eaten with him. Maybe he can't be, you know, it took a contribution from him, but I didn't know. And I didn't know what a monster he was. I didn't know him.
Take money from the capitalist to subvert his money to fight capital. That's the whole point.
And we're going to only have... I'm a full-fledged member of the Warren wing of the Democratic Party.
Jamie Dimon, who's that? Sounds like a schmuck.
But sad to say, we're going to be rooting him on.
We will be. I told my mother I am not supporting the Muslim internment camps. And oh, you should hear how Meshuggah she was over that. I'm making serious sacrifices.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to go iron my Che Guevara t-shirts. So I'm going to have a night out in the town.
Has anybody found DNC Zach's goddamn hacky sack? He cannot work without it. It is how he focuses. I'm not trying to raise my voice and have bad energy here, but he needs his fucking hacky sack in order for us to do our work. Come, Bernie, this way. Let's sit on the floor and have some herbal tea.
All right, strategy. One moment. Mic check.
Mic check.
Oh, God. So, I allowed myself until Thanksgiving. So there'll be two pre-recorded shows on Thanksgiving. There'll be nothing. Then we'll be back next week in full effect, ladies and gentlemen, to fight the president-elect, Mr. Donald Trump. And who knows? I may start mispronouncing Republicans again.
Maybe so. Seems very fitting.
We'll see. I don't know if
I want to encourage him to just follow his passions, which is, you know, quit the presidency. Real estate, dating your daughter.
I mean, over the next couple of days, the big thing I'm going to be reading is the theories on how best to fight Trump. And there's two competing theories, right? There's two competing theories, just very briefly, that people have in terms of fighting Trump. And I'm talking from a strategic standpoint. There are some people who subscribe to one of these theories or the others of these theories because they also want to maintain carrying through on certain policies and ideologies. And I think if there's a way to figure out how to do that, I'd like to do that. But I don't know that that's going to be possible in this context. But the two theories are, one, you just obstruct on everything. You just obstruct on everything, period. And this is without getting into sort of like, you know, obviously, like, we as people, we can't coordinate. We don't have the means necessarily to coordinate with, like, you know, Chuck Schumer's just saying one thing and he's actually going to do another. We don't know. So one is you obstruct everything. The other is you engage upon the things that they agree upon. Now, it's also possible that saying that is really in you obstruct everything. It's just a different approach. And then there's another sort of plane of how you deal with this. That is, do you normalize Donald Trump or do you make him uniquely bad? Do you fight him as a uniquely bad proposition, or do you normalize him and fight him like you would another Republican? Now, my personal opinion is you fight him as something uniquely bad until he becomes the president, Mr. Donald Trump. And then you fight him as a Republican because you need to cleave him from one, if not all, of his power sources. And the way you do that is by fighting him as a Republican. Yes, I think people will still maintain. I mean, obviously, you've got to be vigilant against the fascism and whatnot. Man, particularly because it's going to get much worse if there's any type of terrorist attack here or anything that even remotely looks like a terrorist attack. But I think there's a very good argument that dealing with him as a normal person, not as someone who's tweeting about Hamilton, but as just a really bad president with a bunch of bad ideas, I think is maybe the route to go. But this is stuff that I think, you know, we're going to be talking about and having guests on in the weeks to come to talk about, broadly speaking. And we're going to be talking about things like Medicare and whatnot. But and we'll talk more in the fun half about what you say to your parents, you know, your folks at home. But I think it's very effective, at least at Thanksgiving, with at least the people around the table. I mean, it depends on, you know, what your family's like. But if you're really going home and they're not too upset about the Nazism stuff, you might want to look into a different venue for Thanksgiving this year. All right, 646-257-3920 is the number. And I will turn on the IMs. Don't forget, it's your membership that makes this show possible, folks. You know, they Donald Trump brought the media in for a tongue lashing yesterday. And let me just read this one thing before we go to the fun half, because, you know, there is you know, the blogosphere is not what it was, frankly, in 2004. But I think we're going to see a lot more activity online. We have more of shows that are like this, some dumber than others. But
Chapo Greenhouse.
I have
coming.
A feeling. What's it?
The Chapo Greenhouse is coming.
Chapo Greenhouse?
Yeah, that's Matt and I.
Our green bashing
our
podcast.
Green bashing
oh, your green bashing
podcast. Jill Stein takes on Warren.
Well, but nevertheless, I think a lot of those people are going to be, you know, those people are still, you know, talking about Hillary Clinton's, you know, the going through the WikiLeaks to find stuff that they think is a criminal in terms of to justify their attitude in the run up this election. They'll be done in about 6 months. That's what I tell people now who come at me on Twitter and emails. Just let's table this for 6 months. 6 months later, they're, you know, I got out of politics. I just found it too much conflict. But did you give you a sense of why it's important for you to stay engaged? And what's going to happen with the mainstream media? This is a quote from, or I should say a description from I guess Politico's reporting on what went on in that meeting. Trump turned to NBC News President Deborah Ternus at one point, the source said, and told her the network won't run a nice picture of him. Instead, choosing, quote, this picture of me. He made a face with a double chin. So, one, we have a lunatic who's president, right? But two, Ternus replied that they had a very nice picture of him on their website on the moment. So these people will not capitulate fast enough for Donald Trump. I mean, if you're CNN, yeah, you made $1 billion. But when it comes time to this mega merger of your parent companies, when your Comcast and you want to get rid of net neutrality, when you're Verizon and you have a National Labor Relations Board issue, I mean, we can go on and on and on and on. You know the stories of foreign dignitaries going and staying at Trump Tower in Washington, D.C., running up their bills. And they're like, why would we ever go to the competitor? When I walk in that door with Trump, I want to be able to say, I stayed at your hotel. It's fantastic. And have him just get all excited. This is the reality we're living in.
May your child be a 10 child.
The media is not going. And you know, I think we'll see some in print. But the mass media, television, forget about it. Forget about it. And so people are going to have to stay engaged. I mean, there's going to have to be something wholesale. There's going to have to be some type of wholesale difference. Because even I can tell you, you know, I started going on. Janine was the one who got me onto these programs. They all wanted her on. She didn't want to go on to these shows anymore because after 2003 and the run-up in 2002 to the run-up of the war, she would go on specifically because she was the only person allowed to go on national television and argue why we shouldn't go to war. Because every host knew, and literally the first question they would beg her to go on. They would beg her to go on, particularly on Fox. They would beg her to go on. And she would go on, and she knew the first question was like, how dare you? You're just an actress. What are you doing here? And she didn't want to go on in 2004 because she had taken so much abuse, so many, and gotten so many threats by every means possible. And she went on basically to say, like, I'm not coming on unless you have Sam come on. To leverage that. And to get me on those shows. And when we would go on MSNBC in 2004, I mean, Olbermann may have gotten there somewhere around 2004, 2005, but he wasn't start really doing what we now perceive as Olbermann until like 2005, late 2005. And the lineup at that time was like Scarborough Country, Pat Buchanan, Tucker Carlson. And to go on and say something like we shouldn't go to war was subversive. To say that Bush lied was subversive at that point. And these were networks who just didn't want to go against the grain of being at war. I don't think these were networks who really perceived that there was a guy in there who did not respect any norms and who was going to completely weaponize the government. Completely weaponize it. And, you know, I gotta lie to you. Like, you know, there's some concern in this office. It wouldn't be hard for them to come at us in a myriad of different ways, or, you know, rabid Trumpistas feeling that they're empowered. But we're going to stay here and we're just going to be a little more careful. And we probably will try and get that merger done under the wire. That was a long way of saying you can support the program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. We will update our support our sponsors, but that CISO thing was the coupon code is MAJORITY. And I don't know what the deal is. Do you get like a month off or something like that? But if you want to see Janine's special. And if you buy your crap from Amazon or Jet, do so at majorityreportkickback.com. All right, quick break, fun half. Won't be quite as long as it was going to be before. All right. Thanks again to Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tapes, a brand new amazing podcast, for sponsoring today's episode. Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape is an audio drama told week after week. Features stories about crime, love, mystery, or conspiracy with actors you know and love. Some are dramas, some are comedies. Make sure you don't miss a single episode. Subscribe to Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape on iTunes, Stitcher, Wondery.com, or wherever or however you listen to podcasts.